This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Tonight's final bout is for the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship, scheduled for one fall or to curfew.
From the Portland Sports Arena.
Wrestling fans, Bob Caudle and Johnny Weaver. Welcome to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, the most exciting.
2-7 CFAC Calgary.
Once again, good afternoon, everyone. We're bringing you Mat Time action from the Victoria Pavilion in Calgary.
Well now, never worry, never fear. Stampede Wrestling Time is here. Yes, it is.
Hello, this is Travis. I'm back here with Kelly, continuing our look at the Stampede territory. This would be episode or part five now, Kelly? Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, five.
We thought it was going to be 4 to 5 or 6 episodes. I think I'm looking at what we want, trying to want to do. I think we're going to end up like close to 9.
Yeah, I'm thinking 8 or 9. Yeah, maybe let's just go and do 10.
Sounds good. Sounds great. I mean, hey,
so we're halfway there.
Nobody's throwing us out.
No.
Maybe even
we can do whatever we want. No,
that's right.
No, we can just keep going.
It is 10:15 on a Monday night. It's Canadian Thanksgiving.
Yes.
I am just finishing some pumpkin pie. You were saying you were going to have some later.
Yes.
Speaking of Canada, another big deal for us today as Calgary Flames fans is we signed Johnny Gaudreau. He's an American hockey player. He's really young, and there was like some uncertainty as to it was taking a little longer for him to sign than we had hoped for, but he looks like he could be, and he signed long-term another 6 years. So it's a big deal for Flames fans. The reason why I'm bringing it up is like, this is what we grew up. We grew up being Flames fans, and, you know, I think in the first episode I said, you know, our attachment to wrestling is, you know, there must be like at least some similarities to the people who grew up watching the Von Erichs as that we'd have with the Harts. So how would you all sports fans are different, but
right,
the way that Calgary looks at the Calgary Flames, or like the average, you know, the general Calgary Flames fan, or the general outlook on life for Calgary Flames, or outlook on their team, can you think of a comparable?
Well, I've often compared my like fandom of Bret Hart in the 90s to like cheering for a team, right?
Yeah.
Basically, I lived and died by his wins. When he was champion, I was, you know, on top of the world. And I, you know, we were teenagers, we were in high school. We knew this wasn't legit,
mm-hmm.
as far as like, you know, a legit sporting contest like hockey or like football or whatever. But you know, I cared, you know, just as much as I did when I was watching the Blue Jays in the World Series or Team Canada play or the Flames play, mm-hmm. or the Stampeders, all my favorite teams. And yeah, it was totally like that because it was so important. He was from Calgary. He was making it on the big stage. And it was such a like an underdog story at the time because he was coming from being a tag team wrestler.
Sure.
It didn't seem like – the, you know, the WWF we first encountered was the land of Hogan and Ultimate Warrior and Randy Savage. those guys, it just seemed like there was no chance someone like Bret Hart would ever crack that.
Mm-hmm.
Those yeah. ranks yeah. and be like a heavyweight champion. And then he did. And sure, you can say what you will, you know, oh, well, the steroid scandal hit and they had to, you know, Hogan had left and they were phasing out the big steroid freak guys and things were changing or whatever. But, you know, it was so important at that time. It
yeah.
was just
yeah.
it was so important yeah. to me.
Yeah, it's important to a lot of us, a lot of wrestling fans in Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. Yeah, it was just a cool thing. I was just thinking about more like, you know, the Green Bay Packers have like their cheese heads and,
right.
You know, you can tell like the way like the Red Sox fans are like, you know, dyed in the wool,
mm-hmm.
you know, no pun intended. but I don't know. I come from Calgary. I've lived basically half my life in Calgary. I've remained a Flames fan. I've lived the other half of my life in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And the fan bases are very different. I won't get into it. It's just a different approach to looking at whatever, their favorite team. I guess, I don't know, I was just trying to think of is like the way that the Calgary Flames fans look at the Calgary Flames.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, would you say it's like something like a... the Green Bay Packers, or like, because it's like a smaller town,
right? Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. Yeah, it's in the on the prairies. It's when you look at the rest of the NHL, you got all the American teams, yeah. all the big cities in the States, and then the bigger cities in Canada, of course. And yeah, you know, it was kind of like a lunch pail type team.
Yeah, that's feeling. For as long as I followed them, they've had that kind of that's been a draw for the Calgary Flames fans is that they're got yeah. this work ethic like lunchbox and that
yeah and in the 80s you know they were competing with the Edmonton Oilers who were a dynasty
yeah, yeah.
basically like the New York Yankees of hockey at the time and I often compared that rivalry to her at that time like. The Oilers were the Yankees, and the Flames were like the Brooklyn...
The Brooklyn Dodgers. Yeah, much yeah. better, yeah.
The team that only once ever defeated them. Like, the Dodgers only once ever beat the Yankees.
That's right.
The Flames only once ever beat the Oilers in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, otherwise, and only won one Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Whereas the Oilers won five.
Yeah.
So it was that sort of dynamic where Calgary was, you know, the underdog team in that rivalry.
Yeah, and I think that would definitely have been prevalent in what we're going to see today, even though this was years before. This is still, I guess Edmonton, even in the late 70s, was probably still seen as like the bigger city, right?
Edmonton got the big university. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was a big deal in the early 20th century. They became the capital. Well, that was the biggest.
That's right, yeah.
Chosen over at Calgary, which at the time Calgary was the bigger city at the beginning of the 20th century.
Hmm.
But they went with Edmonton. Edmonton had, yeah, sort of that going for them. It was a university town, and Calgary had the oil going for them
yeah.
that eventually made them the
oh,
bigger
yeah.
city.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now it's, I mean, population wise, it's, I think, quite a bit bigger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, considerably so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
and Edmonton also had the Eskimos in the 70s football team for the CFL. They were a dynasty.
Yeah, yeah.
Too, right, five straight great cups.
Yeah, they're. I mean, it still says, we know this, welcome to the city of champions.
Yep.
It's
true. As a kid growing up, I mean, the Eskimos kicked the Stamps' ass all the time. The Flames, like I just said, were lucky to eke out one playoff series win on a own goal by Steve Smith in Game 7.
Yeah,
you know?
Legendary.
We had to fight for everything. Remember when the Stamps finally beat the Eskimos?
Yes.
I think it was on your birthday.
It was.
I remember watching it at your house.
We did.
14 years old.
Yeah.
And it was on a last-second touchdown pass.
Pee-wee Smith from Danny Barrett. Danny Barrett
to Pee-wee Smith. To send the Stamps to the Grey Cup for the first time in 20 years. Like, that, they hadn't even been to a Grey Cup in 20 years, whereas yeah. Edmonton won by that time, like, probably
yeah.
seven or so Grey Cups. Yeah,
that was madness. And even though it was in Edmonton, Like people storm the field. Our friend Kevin, who couldn't come to my birthday party because he went there, and he stormed the field after the steps.
Took a chunk of grass from Commonwealth.
It was his dad, I thought, that took the grass.
Oh, yeah, probably his dad, because his dad is nutcase.
He's a recognized writer.
I mean, in a good way. Like,
he was crazy, he was a blast.
Right?
Yeah, his dad was a blast.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's enough of digression. But, you know, this is us and what Calgary was and
Why we're doing this show. It's because it's part of our upbringing. It's part of our blood. I mean, this is Calgary. We're just reminiscing about the good old days in Calgary, basically.
That's right. That's right. So we're continuing with our look at the footage that was on the network. This is would have been the third one in chronological order. January 19th, 1979. That sounds right. Right, Kelly?
Yes. Yep. January 19th.
So in these opening titles, I don't know. I haven't mentioned this before. You see Eddie and you see Stu. Can you identify any of the other wrestlers in these titles?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think the one guy maybe his name's John Quinn, the very big person. Mm-hmm.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Beard and long hair.
Yes, yeah.
He was a big heel in the mid-70s in Stampede, but I'm not 100% sure on that. And I don't recognize the faces.
Yeah, I just kind of thought about that at that point. I
want to say they probably had those same titles for several years by this point, probably. Sure. I think they went with that for quite a while.
It looked, even though we're looking at the master tapes, this is still probably the one that they always attached to it, you know, so this is getting a little a little more grainy than their others. So it opens with Eddie and John Foley in the ring. He's talked about how he's inherited a large inheritance recently, and he's smoking a cigar. He's undecided what to do. He's thinking I could go to Puerto Rico or Australia or perhaps a cruise around the world. And stops him on a wrestling question. And he says he's gonna buy his wife two cars. But he has big plans for Big Daddy Ritter. You know, pay him to get rid of people. It just, like, a really great temperament. And he said, let me tell you one thing, Ed. And this comes back. This line, this was his, if you smell what the Rock is cooking of 1979. Money can buy everything. And he says, well, there goes old money bags. Which was, awesome, right?
Yeah, this was cool, because I think this is the beginning of how he becomes J.R. Foley.
That's right. Yeah. This is because he had been
inherited money, and J.R., it's based on J.R. Ewing from the Dallas TV show, The Rich Oil Tycoon.
Never thought about that.
Yeah. So I think we're seeing the beginning of that.
The
that
origin
gimmick,
of, maybe this was.
And I love these. Ed interviewing the heels is like one of the best things on all these shows.
I know.
And, you know, say what you will about Ed as a commentator, I mean, but these interactions, these are pure gold. This is where he really shines.
I think he's
interviewing the heels.
I think so too. John Foley is like, time he's on screen in the three episodes we've seen, he's knocking him out of the park, man.
Yeah, big time.
And this leads us to our first match, which is Hercules Ayala.
Yes.
Versus Roy Lawrence or Ray Lawrence?
I think it's Louis Lawrence.
Louis Lawrence. Yeah, I did have it in brackets here too. Yeah. Maybe Louis, I heard it later. Louis Lawrence. Ed compares Hercules to Stomper earlier, and I could kind of see that. Hector is just a squash match. Hector destroys him. Didn't they call him Hector at some point? Is he also known as Hector Ayala?
I'm not sure. I mean, he's famous in Puerto Rico.
He beats him with a bear hug. Tell me what you know about Hercules Ayala.
He, like I said, in the 80s, he becomes one of Carlos Colon's like main rivals. Hmm. And they have a pretty memorable feud in the late 80s that I've never watched. Like, I've watched a lot of that stuff, like Colon versus Stan Hansen. That feud's mm-hmm. great. Mm-hmm. I've seen some other stuff, and I always wanted to get into the feud with Hercules Ayala and Colon, because a lot of people in PWO pimp it as being a really great feud.
Cool.
Yeah. He's pretty iconic.
He's got a good look.
He's got that streak of white hair.
Yes. Yes.
Was he struck by lightning, or he did something?
Or just like something happened when he was really scared. Holden Caulfield has the same thing in Catcher in the Rye. Is that one white streak?
It adds to his image.
It's kind of like, do you remember Blackula? Does he have the same look?
Totally.
But with a little bit with Juan from Welcome Back, Cotter.
Right.
Yeah, right. That's what I kind of saw some of that. Just kind of mix of those two. Yeah, really great look.
He would wrestle in Stampede off and on until 1984, actually, Hercules. And he at one time teamed with Jim Neidhart and held the tag titles in Calgary.
Cool. Yeah, who we'll see later. Mm-hmm. So this cuts, just a quick little, like that wasn't long.
That was his first match, too, in the territory.
Good, makes him look like a beast,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about the guy he beat, Louis Lawrence?
Basically, he was like the Calgary equivalent of a jobber to the stars. He was there for a long time, too, 70s and 80s. But yeah, I'm sure he participated in many of these lopsided matches over the years.
Sure. So we got into Ed in ring interview with Mr. Wrestling, and Bruce Hart is there as well. Mr. Wrestling, this is Mr. Wrestling 1, of course.
Yes.
In a nice sweater, he just comes off as like really relaxed. He's enjoying himself in Calgary.
Yeah.
Bruce has just beat Frederick Charles III. He's soft-spoken as well, but he's like, I felt somewhat inspired tonight. And he kind of puts over Charles III about what a tough competitor it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mr. Wrestling starts talking about a new man in the territory. He talks about the rift between Dynamite Kid and Bret Hart on the Montana Wrestling heavyweight title. He really puts over the team of Dynamite and Bret. Which was leading. I mean, we'd learn later that he's having a match with Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce says, "I value victory more than anything else." Bruce, and I think you could say this with a lot about the Harts, especially at this time, probably all of them, is they're just honest, but just like to a fault. It's like, just go out there and say what you're really thinking. But there's just like this dullness. There's no...
It's true.
No spark. It's not bullshit. Like, I know. I can tell you really feel this way. But why should I care about you feeling this way, you know?
Yeah, I totally understand what you mean. I think we're seeing them when they're still pretty young.
Yeah.
And in the 80s, they definitely develop more of a fiery personality in their promos.
Yeah, when we get up to when he's in bad company, you'll see quite a different change. But, I mean, you could say that about promos in general at this time. I shouldn't say that.
No.
Superstar Billy Graham is...
Yeah, no, there was tons of great promo guys at the time. No, it's more just I'd chalk it up to lack of experience at this point. They hadn't, it takes a while. It seems like a lot of people become naturals in the ring first, and then it takes a little longer for them to become comfortable on the mic, right?
Yeah, we see it all the time. Yeah.
Yep. But it was cool seeing Mr. Wrestling cut a promo, because I can't say that I don't recall ever seeing a Mr. Wrestling promo before.
Cool.
Mr. Wrestling 2, there's lots.
Yeah. He asks what Dynamite age. What's his age? How old is this guy? And he brings up the weight difference and gives he gave a quick Luthez shout out. These two episodes are full of it's just name drop tacular of guys who are supposed to show up and people who have been in the territory.
Mm-hmm.
And a nice little bit of humility from Mr. Wrestling. He says, you know, I can't talk about the weight difference. He says, you know, I can't lose those pounds, especially after the Christmas holidays. It was super endearing. It's like your uncle up there.
Yeah, no, he totally was like the nice uncle. The sweater just added to that whole image completely.
Was this just a cup of coffee in Calgary or what?
Yeah, I believe so. He was winding down at this point. He'd been going since maybe even the 50s. Mm-hmm. He was a big star in the 60s, mostly in the South, in Georgia and Florida. He once did like this ongoing gimmick where he actually was taking on all comers. Like he was doing that mm-hmm. as late as the 60s, where he would take on actual fans in matches and in shoots. Wow. He was actually a very accomplished college wrestler in the 50s. Tim Wooden is his real name.
Mm-hmm.
And he, in one instance, he actually got into a scrape in these taking on all comers matches with a leader of a bike gang that ended up biting off the tip of was like his pinky finger.
Jesus Christ.
And then it ended up like the biker came back later with his whole gang and there was some,
it's like fucking Gimme Shelter.
Yeah. But it's crazy. But no, Mr. Wrestling was really a really big star, but at a time when no footage really exists, uh-huh. unfortunately, right? The 60s, early 70s.
Was he a big draw?
Yeah. He was like regionally mm-hmm. in the South. He was a big draw in the late 60s, early 70s. But Mr. Wrestling 2, who was Johnny Walker, was the spinoff character that actually ended up becoming bigger. Because he was part of Georgia Wrestling when TBS first hit big on cable.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Wrestling 2 was more of a fiery baby face. Like he was known for those interviews where he was like really would get really riled up and start screaming and like being very passionate. Whereas Mr. Wrestling was the more reserved type. There's a whole like,
how old is he at this point?
Mr. Wrestling?
During this interview?
I would put him at like mid to late 40s probably.
Yeah.
Because I think he was done by 1980 as a full-time wrestler and then would have some sporadic comebacks over the years.
But, mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, he was definitely winding down at this point.
Yeah, it was really cool. Oh, speaking of another like a real brief digression, did you see who the dude Tiger Mask W is?
No.
Kota Ibushi.
Oh, really?
The mask is, because it's tied to the animated series,
yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Which I did just watch the first episode of. And so he fought last night at that Kings of Pro Wrestling or whatever.
Right.
I think it was the opening match. And he came out and all of a sudden he starts hitting some of these moves along the way. And that's when people started to really notice, like, oh, so that's why he wouldn't set like it. This is a guy who's not saying no to WWE an animated character from New Japan. He's a super unique artist. I see him as an artist. Like he's a guy I see as more of a pure artist than, yeah, I mean, they're all artists, obviously, but you know what I mean? Yeah. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Anyways, I thought that, like, it was interesting, and I think it's really cool.
No, I didn't know that. That's cool that they've brought that back, because the cartoon existed well before the wrestler ever did, you know, in the 70s.
Oh, really? I watched...
Yeah, it was originally a cartoon, and then it was during... They were bringing it back in the early 80s, and to tie it in, they put it
on Misawa.
They developed. Sayama. Sorry. Okay. Sayama was the original Tiger Mask. Misawa was the second Tiger Mask.
In the 90s,
late 80s.
Sorry.
Sayama was early 80s. But it was when they were reviving the cartoon that they brought in the wrestler Tiger Mask for the first time. Yeah.
I found the first episode too. It's purely expositional, but Okada makes an appearance. There's a underlying theme of like the enemy territory is like basically the WWE from America trying to take over.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. I've read the synopsis of this.
Yeah. It's interesting. So we'll see. I'm excited to watch it. Mm-hmm. And especially now that Ibushi's tied to it.
I can't believe he's the new Tiger Mask.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
That's so cool. Anyways, we're a few continents away, back in Calgary, a few decades ago.
Yeah.
Our next match.
Appropriately with Japanese wrestlers.
Now. That's right. Are the current tag champs of Bret and Keith Hart versus Mr. Sakurada and Mr. Hedo. This is a non-title match. It's a hot crowd. It's already tied 1-1.
Mm-hmm. 30 minutes in, according to Ed, when we joined this footage.
But, you know, we had talked about Keith being kind of blue collar and kind of dull or whatever, but I was seeing some fire from him in this match. The crowd got crazy for the hot tag. And Keith had a not a bad house of fire.
Mm-hmm.
A really nice stalled backdrop from Sakurada to kill his shine. It was cool. It showed something you don't usually see with a backdrop, I can remember from that. And then cool double team from behind the ref's back for the win.
Yeah.
Then the ref was distracted, but there was no reason for Bret to be distracting the ref at that moment. Do you remember this?
Right, yeah.
It was a little fishy, whatever. I thought Keith Hart looked better here in this brief thing than we had seen in the previous. I just thought he had that. He was missing that little spark that we hadn't seen. Maybe it takes you 30 minutes to get that, get that out of Keith.
He's like Greg Valentine.
Yeah.
Like 20 minutes to get warmed up. So
who knows? Maybe that's the thing, man.
Maybe Keith was like, you know, the 30-minute man of Stampede Wrestling.
Yeah.
And how about Bret's haircut?
He had like those peach fuzz sideburns.
Super short. I've never seen him with shorter hair, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty funny. Because Ed entered, and Mr. Sakurada just kind of kept lingering, even though Ed wanted to interview the baby faces here. But Bret was fired up and says they will give them their title match. So I guess that would have been the follow-up. We should mention, the next available of the WWE footage is like 6 months from here, eh?
Yes, June.
Yeah.
So
we kind of got like, whatever. Like, I mean, these three were kind of at least kind of close to each other, but so you could kind of get an eye on the storylines or get a feel for the storylines, but we're going to be jumping ahead significantly in the next one.
Mm-hmm.
So our next match, which is, oh my God. A full match of Dynamite Kid versus Mr. Wrestling.
Yeah, this just really made my day when I realized this was on footage.
For me, this felt like it was like a bunch of that, what I recognize as World of Sports stuff to start, with cartwheels to get out of wrist locks and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting mix of English amateur, you know, technical wrestling and American technical wrestling, Mr. Wrestling being the legit, you know, college champion in the 50s, and it's mm-hmm. a really unique matchup that it's more people should see this.
But
go ahead and explain it, because it's really cool.
Yeah, it starts off with like really nice mat work from both. Early I noticed there's an Indian guy in a couch and sweater who lights up a dart. right in the front. A lot of Cowichan in the audience tonight. Really fun. Yeah, just we saw really fun reversals of holes, or of holds, pardon me. Dynamite. What is this? I'm just like, there was a nice dynamic. Mr. Wrestling hits a good old fashioned toe hold. This at a nice deliberate pace. The crowd is quiet, but you can tell they're into it.
Basically like a face versus face match,
mm-hmm.
and a technical match. Dynamite was on the road
transitioning.
Like you can see in this match, by the end he's almost like a full fledged heel.
Yeah.
But you know, he's showing flashes of being cocky and being like a show off. But yeah, the crowd at first didn't really know how to take it because it was like billed probably as like a scientific exhibition.
Yeah,
those matches usually don't have a lot of heat behind them because you don't have a heel in there to get the heat.
But so. I mean, like you would kind of get that smattering of applause after a sequence and things like that.
Yeah, this reminded me a lot of the Bruno Sammartino versus Larry Zbysko match that started the feud in 1980 where Larry turned on Bruno. Because that was, a scientific exhibition type match with, the young punk sort of getting cocky and then eventually turning on the older wrestler.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, they're going back and forth and during their mat work, Dynamite gets thrown out once, and after getting thrown out of the ring for a second time, he shows more fire. He had given him a slap to the face earlier, and Mr. Wrestling returns a slap after the second one.
Mm-hmm.
A really cool turnbuckle spot after some more network. Inus, there's a kid in the front row who looks exactly like a third grade version of me, just sitting right next to the couch and the Indian guy couch and smoking that dirt. Mr. Wrestling gets fed up with the mat work and hits three or four hard chops to the chest. Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm.
Like as the Dynamite Kid rolls him up, tries to steal a couple wins. Mr. Wrestling slowly getting more aggressive as this match builds up. Dynamite starts to do some great work into hanging abdominal stretch, which looks awesome. Mr. Wrestling backs him off into a corner. Dynamite Kid slips again out of the ring and gets Mr. Wrestling to fall for it on the way back in. Mr. Mm-hmm. Wrestling gets it back from him and hits a great bulldog. Like, fuck yeah. You know, remember Kelly and I used to film wrestling on my trampoline way back. I can't believe this is the first time we're talking about this.
Yeah.
We all had characters and stuff, and one of our dear friends, Rick, lives in Vancouver here with us. We've talked about having him on for one of these. He's a local, works for a Vancouver radio station.
Mm-hmm.
His finisher was the bulldog. His character name was the fly. And his finishing move was the bulldog. Cause it's just an easy move to do when you don't have a lot of space on a trampoline and it's easy not to hurt your friend, but you just don't see it as much in the way that, Mr. Wrestling hit it here. This was good.
Yeah.
I always pop for a bulldog because of that.
Right.
Dynamite Kid with a good heel move to kind of steal it with a small package. This is an awesome match, right?
Yeah, I really like this match because we got also the full match from bell to bell, which is uber rare, of course, in Stampede. There was great psychology in this match, great storytelling. I loved the story. Like, it was the typical... student teacher sort of thing. And also with Dynamite, the story of Dynamite, on the road to becoming a heel, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I love the finish because, he totally took advantage of Mr. Wrestling's good nature and good sportsmanship and suckered him in and got a win.
Yeah.
With a small package. This was, by far the best thing I think we've seen
for sure.
This 70s footage.
Yeah, I agree. So from that match, we got to Ed's outside, or no, it's Stu with some sponsors, and Ed's interviewing them. There's some old.
They're from like a lodge or something.
In Montana.
It's always Montana.
In the 70s, it was the place to go, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Bringing in people from Montana, talking about the shows in Montana. I guess, I don't know if the American... I thought in the 70s the American dollar was weaker than the Canadian dollar for a good part of it.
Who knows?
Yeah.
It's an older couple, like a couple of seniors, right?
Yeah.
And the lady has like a beehive hairdo.
Yeah.
And it's just like, hey, we'll see you down in Butte. And from there it goes straight to the match. And I thought we were getting two... full, like, back-to-back full matches.
Right. But
apparently the first fall had already occurred.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It went to one of the combatants, which was Big Daddy Ritter, and he's taking on Gilbert Hayes?
Gil Hayes, yeah.
Gilbert Hayes.
longtime Stampede mainstay since about 1967. Six-time tag team champion in Calgary.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. He was a well-known name in those parts at that time.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we were the first fall went to Big Daddy. Some nice hard punches from Gilbert that the crowd just likes. They just love to see Big Daddy Ritter get beat up. He's so over as a heel at this territory this territory at this time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Gilbert Hayes had great boots. Do you remember them?
It's been a while since I've
watched. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Even I wrote it down. I can't even remember what they look like. Big Daddy Ritter's healing it up with kind of grabbing the face and a lot of tooth grabs, that sort of thing. And I don't know if you heard this shout out, but it was pretty clear. He shouts out, "Come on, white boy!"
Jesus, no, I didn't. But that's awesome.
Yeah. The crowd loves to see anybody get a move on Ritter. He misses twice with a running knee to a corner. Do you remember this was kind of a reoccurring thing?
Right.
Kept trying to hit. So Hayes starts going after the knee. Crowd really wants to. I've written this down many times. About they'd love to see Big Daddy get beat up. He hits an atomic drop on his bad leg, so that puts them both down. And then, you know, Gilbert just keeps going after that leg. Here's the funny thing about this match. I'm sure you noticed this. Big Daddy Ritter is constantly kicking out at one.
Right.
Throughout this match. This is the most kickouts at one I've seen in any match. There's headbutts. Okay, so all of a sudden we see Neidhart for the first time.
Yeah, he was in Hayes' corner. I believe he'd been there the whole match.
Okay.
Kind of sitting down. He wasn't standing.
Yeah.
So it wasn't easy to see. And he had some awesome-looking furry boots on.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah. Obviously, it's impossible to recognize him at this stage.
Yeah, no facial hair. Like, totally clean-shaven. He was very young. Like, Ed calls him a young, good-looking kid.
Yeah.
At one point.
So would he have been... you know, part of the family already? Or is he just kind of new?
I don't think he had married into the family yet. I think he'd only been in the territory maybe a couple months at most at this point. This was very early in his Stampede run. Very early in his wrestling career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where had he been before this?
I don't even know if he'd worked a territory before this.
He was a football player, right?
Yeah, he was a football player. He played for a few NFL teams in exhibition games, but never in a regular season game. But yeah, I think he may have went straight to Calgary to train and start. He may have even had a couple. No, I don't think he played in the CFL. I would have known that.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is where he started, actually.
Yeah. So he gets involved with Foley and distracts Big Daddy Ritter, and Gilbert Hayes rolls him up to even things up. Gilbert Hayes hits a sunset flip right after this for a one count. Big Daddy Ritter keeps missing. He keeps missing with that knee to the corner, and we hear malfunction at the junction in this episode. Misses a wild clothesline and kicks out at one. Epic brawl. It's really like both men seemed exhausted. Like this match had good heat and stiff looking elbows from Big Daddy Ritter. Great spot where the two collide mid ring. What's his name? Big Daddy Ritter goes for a splash. I don't know if Gilbert was supposed to get out of the way there. Do you remember this near the end? It looked like he kind of caught a bit of them there, and they were both kind of down.
Right.
I don't know. But anyways, Gilbert tries to roll him up for a one count. Big Daddy Ritter is great. I wrote down at this point. A drop headbutt to the kidney, chops to the throat, laughs while he stands on his neck on the ropes. More tooth grabbing and biting. Gilbert Hayes tries to fight back. Big Daddy Ritter keeps slowing him down, and then you hear, "Come on, Big White Hope."
Yes, that part I did notice for sure.
And then he he hits a finally a two count for the first time in the match, other than when he got counted for a three count. That's the one weird thing about, there's all these one counts, and then he gets the second fall, and then there's more one counts, and then finally a two count later. Like, because it makes sense as that, like, that he could be, like, wearing him down, right?
Yeah, exactly. You shouldn't be able to get a two count on him at first.
Mm-hmm. But there was a three count in the middle is the only
right,
thing.
Right, exactly, yeah. And yeah. Different.
And I guess you can attribute it to whatever outside interference, but this is just an interesting thing. So Foley, speaking of which, Foley and Neidhart again get interviewed. This is where I really noticed Neidhart's furry boots, and he was fired up. And Foley gets behind Big Daddy Ritter, and then Hayes gets them trapped in the corner. Stu enters to try to pull them apart. He throws shoulders to the gut on Big Daddy Ritter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ed calls it a rhubarb, and the match ends in a DQ. It's a great stuff. So, yeah, like, you know that Pavilion crowd was wanting to come back and, you know, see these guys go some more.
Yeah, well, you know, of course Ritter becomes Junkyard Dog, and that phase of his career is well discussed and well talked about, but the Big Daddy Ritter phase of his career is totally under the radar.
Wow.
Nobody talks about it, and I'm starting to think that, you know, it wasn't long. It was, you know, basically he was just in Calgary. It was the only place he had the Big
name.
Daddy Ritter gimmick, as far as I know, and by the end of 79 he'd be in Mid-South working as Junkyard Dog, so it wasn't a very long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm loving Big Daddy Ritter.
Oh, man, me too.
And you mentioned the Great White Hope thing, and it just struck me, like, what they're doing here is, like, they're going back to the Jack Johnson gimmick. Jack Johnson was the heavyweight boxing champion of the world in the early 20th century, and the whole thing was, you know, they kept sending these Great White Hopes against him. No one could beat him, and he was champ for like 7-8 years. So basically, Stu used his, you know, encyclopedic knowledge of sports to come up with this gimmick. Well, there's this boxer named Jack Johnson in 1910.
Everyone's gonna get
over
it.
Really big.
Everyone's gonna get it.
Yeah. But it was a common thing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole race baiting side to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he's really good in this role, and he's a pretty versatile performer in the ring, much more so than he would be as Junkyard Dog.
That's for sure.
So I'm really impressed with what I've seen of Big Daddy Ritter.
We get a little bit more of him here too. I think we should be getting basically the kind of from the start to the end of his stint in I mean, we're going to be missing all the stuff in between. Like, we're just getting, like, glimpses of it, of his time here when we look at this stuff, this footage. Mm-hmm. I thought it's funny, right after the match ends in a DQ, people are just right out the door. You can just see people getting ready to go. Got to get to those cars and get that, trying to get out of the pavilion on a Friday night. Forget about it, you know, like, you can tell.
Right. Well, that, you know, even when, you know, we were young going to hockey games at the Saddle Dome, I remember the traffic was always a nightmare.
Yeah, the worst. I don't know if this is a thing that in Calgary around, there's still lots of some, like, of that lower income housing around where the Saddle Dome is. And you can get cheaper parking, and they'll just let you park in their backyard. So backyards will have, like, on hockey game nights, will have, like, a dozen cars in their backyard.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a – I guess it just depends on where your stadium or arena is located, right?
Yeah, I think it's common. I know in the States, in California, well, in L.A., recently with the Rams coming back, that was the big controversy, was that people were charging, like, what, how many – like $500 to park or whatever, just for a game. Maybe not that much, but, you know, and the Coliseum in LA is right next to a pretty rough neighborhood.
Yep.
Right. So there's a parallel between Calgary and Los Angeles. Well, I know. Hasn't Victoria Park, like,
it's changing. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Changing. But there are still, like I said, the, every time my dad has a guy that we always go, and, like, he's become, my dad has season tickets to the Calgary Flames games. So he, and he always stays, or always pulls into this guy's yard.
Right. And for listeners who aren't familiar with the area, the Victoria Pavilion where Stampede Wrestling was held was basically adjacent to the Saddle Dome.
Mm-hmm.
Flames.
It's still there. It's still there.
Yeah,
like it's all
still
part
there.
Of the,
yeah,
the Stampede the grounds, right?
And there's also the corral, which is in between the pavilion and the Saddle Dome in size, basically like 8,000, mm-hmm. I would say. And it's where the Flames played originally.
Originally, yeah.
And it's still there, right? It's still
used. That'll be, that's your, you know, during, like, you know, the Stampede is a 10-day event where you get all the same sort of things that play. The Super Dogs always get the corral.
That's right.
Super Dogs, that's their turf. Super Dogs
the pavilion gets like the sheep shearing.
Sheep contest. Shearing and like, oh yeah. Yeah. All the livestock
cattle
stuff.
Show, the livestock show.
Yeah. It's so
that's
weird.
That's what it's more well known for.
Right? Yeah.
More I think well even, that than wrestling.
Or at least that's what it was used for more often than not.
Yeah.
Anyways, we should take a break because that's the end of this episode. So here's some words from good people at Place to Be Nation.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickerstaff, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO PTBN Podcast Network.
Okay, our next episode, as we said, skips forward about 6 months to June 15th, 1979. Our first match is mixed tag, which is wrestlers and regular typicals. I'm trying to do this as in a 2016 voice. You know what I mean? I'm not right. Gonna. Yeah, it's, gonna you've got your typical wrestlers. I'm not gonna call them normal wrestlers. They're typical wrestlers, and then you have the wrestlers who are smaller than and stature than them. So they would be your smaller wrestlers. I guess that's fair.
Disadvantaged height wise.
Yes, disadvantaged height wise. Mixed match. So we had Tom Standen, who's your typical size wrestler, teaming with Tiny Tim and Cowboy Lang, who, before I even, well, okay, I'll say everybody else, who's the big guy on the heel side?
Barabbas.
Barabbas, yeah.
Who's also a famous name in Puerto Rican wrestling. This was cool to see this guy just pop up because I've only heard him talked about. It was on Chris Zellner's Exile on Bad Street last year. They had a History of Puerto Rico show with a poster from PWO, who's from Puerto Rico. He goes by El Boricua on the PWO site, and he's like a historian of Puerto Rican wrestling. And apparently Barabbas was like one of the main heels in the 70s in Puerto Rico that really got the territory hot for the first time. So this was cool to see him turn up randomly in a mixed tag match. First match of the show. Here's like a all-time legend of Puerto Rico. Here you go.
Tagging with Billy the Kid and Butch Cassidy. Everybody has all the little people have cowboy themes.
Yes.
Except for Tiny Tim for some reason. Hey, turn on the TV. It's like, who's this asshole getting married? Hey, that'll do.
And Cowboy Lang's name came up on Ric Flair's podcast just a couple episodes ago.
Oh, yeah?
He was a very well-endowed little person. According to the Nature Boy.
I mean, it's a nice story, but can you believe anything out of Nature's mouth lately? That is so funny. He was the standout in this match. I'm going to say Cowboy Lang.
He was the Ric Flair of the little people.
So how do you spell that, Barabbas?
Barabbas.
Fuck, I wasn't even close. I was guessing like Garagus Verabbas. Jesus. Right away, I thought Cowboy Lang was awesome. The crowd was loving him because he was the one getting in the... He was by far the most athletic in this match.
Mm-hmm.
All of the fucking Jesus, all the midgets in this match.
Correct. It's the easiest way.
Were great workers, I thought.
Well, they worked a ton of matches. This was like the peak of midget wrestling in the States. So they work, you know, as much as the regular wrestlers. So they had 250, 300 matches a year. All over the country, all over the United States and Canada. So they had a lot of work. So, yeah, they were pretty good performers.
Awesome desperate tag from Tiny Tim to stand in. Ed mentions the Stomper and Duke Savage coming into town soon.
Yes.
Continues
the very next week, apparently.
Yeah, fuck. Just missed it.
Which is cool because we have that show.
Do we?
Yes, is that the very one? Next episode. From the network.
Oh, awesome. Great. So we're going to get to see some more Stomper?
I guess so, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Another great bonus.
Fantastic. So who was it with... somebody had some stiff kicks. Who's... Barabbas. Jesus. And Billy the Kid hurts his knee on a spot. Like, he uses his knee in an offensive way, but because it's on a big guy, it ends up hurting his knee. So it had those comedy spots in it. But mixed in with these guys really working well. But Cowboy Lang gets a tough shot on him and then bites him and then starts throwing drop kicks like crazy. Like a great house of fire from this guy. Like he looked like he looked after himself too. Really good body. There was good comedy more. Barabbas didn't want to fight anymore. There was a good Full Nelson spot, like back and forth, where they kind of kept reversing Full Nelsons into each other's corners. And then we hear a malfunction in the junction with number four from one in episode, obviously, but this one he really sang it. It was like, a malfunction at the junction! Because it's, matched the whimsical nature of these fairyland nymphs dancing in front of me. I'm getting less and less politically correct as we go here.
It's wrestling. You can't be politically
that's
correct.
Right, that's right. The layer of sleaze. Really good workers, like I said. Butch Cassidy, who he was the tallest of the little people.
Yeah.
And he was the one that I thought was kind of like standing out the least. But he threw one awesome facial. I don't know if you remember it. He was going into a corner. He just kind of made this wild, like, ha! Kind of face before he did it.
Yeah, it
like made me, like, see, like, some legit, like, this guy could have been the potential to really kind of be, like, a big midget heel of the time.
Maybe he was.
Maybe he was. Good fun finish with the faces prevailing. So yeah, it was this was, I guess, well, I mean, the curtain jerk for the TV version. The first time we've seen, and, you know, we read a lot about how Stu would love to bring in the midgets and bring in, the more gimmicky matches and stuff. Yeah.
But this was a common part of a lot of wrestling territories at the time. Mm-hmm. At a midget match on the card, which would attract people. I mean, it was this spectacle thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I thought so.
Tom Stanton had Tom Stanton written on the side of his
tights. Yeah.
Which was interesting. He was a jobber in the WWF in the early 70s or mid 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Not much else. I don't have too much. Oh, he did work in Vancouver at one point.
Hmm.
And it was actually a multiple title holder in Vancouver. Oh, yeah. Wow. This would be in the 80s. So that sort of speaks for how far Vancouver had declined in the 1980s.
Tom Stanton,
multiple time champion in Vancouver.
Interesting.
And Barabbas had an interesting hairstyle, which was like the reverse mutton chop.
That's right. It was weird.
Where he's bald on top, but hair all.
Yeah. Else. I also wasn't even sure if it was hair. I thought it was like.
I know it did kind of look like paint. I don't
know. Something it was.
It's supposed. It was very unique.
Yeah.
Nonetheless.
So it cuts to an in-ring interview with Stu. And he says, we've got some powerful stuff coming up. And he talks about Archie coming up. And this is when they start talking about the world's title. So are they talking NWA at this point?
Yes, this was still NWA. Eventually they go with the AWA title.
I feel like someone mentions Harley later. Is that...
Yeah, Harley Race.
Harley Race would have been the champ at this time?
Yeah, he would have been the NWA champ.
That's what I was thinking. I'm not as fucking dumb as I look.
And Stampede season was coming up, and that was usually when they brought the NWA champion.
Cool. Yeah, because they mentioned Stampede season a couple times in this, the Stampede week coming up.
Yeah. Stu seemed kind of lost out there.
Mm.
This promo, I don't know what
it was. It did seem older. He was starting to look older already, yeah? And just that, like, that build, like, you remember the build that he had, like, that, like, the broad shoulders,
yeah,
the 1960s footage is now starting to turn into just that weird kind of thing that happens to, like, old soldiers, you know?
And, that's a good
person. You know, and just, like, he's lived a life, you can tell.
Oh, totally, he did, and he was in his 60s by this time, Yeah.
So they mentioned the names Nelson Royal, who was part of the territory at this time, right? What can you tell me about him?
Well, Nelson Royal was he was like the longtime junior heavyweight champion for the NWA. So he would tour around.
I see.
Just like the heavyweight champion for the NWA.
And they mentioned Andre the Giant. Coming, and he calls it a Wrestle Royal coming up in Great Falls, $1,000, but that's a
Battle Royal.
Battle Royal.
Yeah.
Everybody's put in $100 there. Each wrestler's put in $100. Yes, it's about this Battle Royal coming up in Great Falls, Montana.
Yeah, I think there's some footage of Andre's visit to Calgary this time, because there's a match. It's a two-ring Battle Royal in Calgary. You may have seen it's on YouTube. It's on the best of the Stampede set that you have.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think it's from 79.
Was Andre in? I seem to remember. I feel like I see an image of him being in the Stampede parade one year.
Yes. I thought so. He was probably multiple times. Actually.
That's great.
Because he, like the NWA champion, Andre often came. Mm-hmm. During Stampede season to Calgary.
Yeah, cool. So that leads us to our next match, which is of note. It's Bret Hart.
Of note. Bret Hart. In many different ways.
Yeah. Bret Hart versus Jim Neidhart. Do you think this is the first time?
It is. It's the first time they were in the ring together. Like, they had tagged before, they hadn't wrestled each other before. So here's more history right here.
Huh.
Amazing that this just pops up on a random episode. Oh, yeah, two guys that'll be a famous tag team in the 80s. Here they are for the first time.
And I think as we're going through this, I think we're learning that there's a method to the madness for why they've put these episodes up, clearly.
Yeah,
right?
Oh, definitely. It was the ones that included... guys that would be famous in the WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We come in at the 10-minute mark. Neidhart's doing that trademark slam. Even then, this is really early, right? You know that the way that he body slams differently.
Yeah.
Totally. Natalya does it now, too, which is nice.
That's cool.
Those turnbuckles look painful, I thought. Neidhart kind of botches a move, but it translated nicely into mat work.
Right. Yeah, that they did recover okay on that one.
And then they brought it. It happened again. It was a similar botch, but it looked like because these things were happening, and because they had incorporated that amateur looking stuff earlier, this wasn't a good match.
No,
I'm not going to come out here and say it was, but it didn't look like a shit show.
No, it was sloppy. Yeah, I mean, they hadn't wrestled each other before. Neidhart was green as grass.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like this uber choreographed matches of today. When there is a botch, it's very noticeable because they almost freeze and then don't know what to do now.
Yeah.
Here it was just like they were tripping over each other, and it fit more into like if this was an actual fight, you'd have these awkward moments, you know. So
it felt like Bret refused to get out of the moment kind of thing. Even if we are going to fuck up, like, no, this is still a fight, man. My dad's going to give me a whooping if I don't.
No, the recovery by the guys after the botch is way better than the recovery of most wrestlers nowadays. Yeah.
Anyway, so it's as quick and dirty gets. Bret wins with a roll-up bridge, which was nice. The roll-up bridge it ended up looking okay.
Mm-hmm.
Bret is interviewed afterwards. He's faster, more experienced, more experienced. He talks about getting both belts back, but then he kind of puts one over more than the other. Do you remember this? He's like, maybe I care a little more about this one than I do that. Because I think it was a tag belt, because he talks about taking on Dory Funk and Larry Lane, like more...
are apparently the tag team champions in Calgary right now.
Jesus Christ!
Which is strange. I didn't know Dory Funk held a Calgary title before.
Fuck, man.
But then I think, doesn't Ed say they won the belts and then left the territory?
Mm.
So you're right. Yeah, so I'm not sure. That was an interesting thing. I'll have to do some follow-up research on that whole thing.
Yeah, but like I said, we're just hearing legend after legend name.
The thing with them winning the belts and leaving the territory would have been a cover for Dory not being around very often. He wasn't going to be a permanent member of the Stampede stable, so he would just go away, go and do his other tours, and then come back and drop the straps probably a few months later or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Which leads us to our next match, which is again another full match. Jerry Morrow and Hubert Gallant, Mr. Hito and Sakurada. Jerry's working his way up the card.
Yeah. You know, that's slightly above where he was months ago.
I noticed Jerry Morrow has a different, more cautious energy about himself. Did you notice this? He's kind of like, doesn't want to get, like, remember before he was just like that white, wanted to fight.
Very hot-headed.
Yeah.
Almost just like walked out on a match before, you know, leaving his partner high and dry just because he was upset.
Yeah. So he tags Hubert Gallant. Hubert Gallant has a long history of a Stampede, right?
I think so, yeah. He was from the Maritimes, from New Brunswick. And yeah, he wrestled a lot in Stampede, all the way up to 1985, actually.
Yeah, so Hubert Gallant had a really fun arm lock move I've never seen. Do you remember this? Where they just, he just, like, he had it in with his leg, and he just kept doing, like, this kind of roll over.
Well, right. Yeah, that's a cool little move, yeah.
Yeah, Sakurada or somebody was trying to get out. Mm-hmm. Jerry Morrow mistakenly lets him tag. He comes in throwing drop kicks and misses one, and Jerry Morrow is, I'm noticing a trend here, is he's just not a smart wrestler. And no. By that I mean like by what the psychology of the match is.
Right, like, if it was kayfabe or if it's real.
Yes.
He's making a lot of bad choices.
Yes, but that relates to the smartness of the performer too, because you're out there telling a story, so why should you all of a sudden, if you're this, unless you're being told, like, look, you're this baby face that we want people to cheer for you, but you always make this dumb decision that kind of hurts your... hurts your team, because he dodges and he does a hilarious dive for a hot tag. Do you remember this?
Right. Yeah.
He's like, it was, I don't know. So something. Oh yeah. Okay. So what? Sakura drop kicks to Hubert Gallant's back mid atomic drop. Like he was about to, he's trying to give an atomic drop to Mr. Hedo.
Right.
I don't know. There was just it just felt like a weird story to tell, because once again, even though Jerry Morrow had some good stuff, like I think we knew him 10 years later, or pardon me, like we became eight, more familiar with him like eight yeah. years later.
Mm-hmm.
When he was definitely slowed down, or mm-hmm. he had definitely slowed down,
mm-hmm.
But he's just like those little things in telling a story within a match that he either he's, I don't know, you know what I'm saying?
No, it's true. I mean, there's a reason why he's a career mid-carder. He mm-hmm. He doesn't have that next level of storytelling yeah. ability, of talent, or whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it. He's similar, and not just because he's black, but he's similar to SD Jones.
Sure.
The WWF sure. at basically the same time.
Sure, I was going to say somebody like a more modern-day comparison would be somebody like Zack Ryder.
Yeah, and Parv would, he's often commented about... SD Jones being, there's a reason, if you were looking at it purely as if wrestling was real and what they were doing was legit, that the reason why SD Jones isn't a champion is because, well, he made this, his choices during the match are often what leads to his look.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's
mm-hmm.
a smart wrestler.
Yeah, but I feel like that may have been more deliberate than what Morrow was doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, Jerry Morrow, he's been in all three episodes.
Yes,
and I believe he's 0-3.
Yeah, he is. I hope he's in every episode. Like, we got to have one guy. I wonder. There's got to be. Well, I guess there's been others that have been on every episode, but
yeah.
It'd be nice if he did go
6-6.
Went six. another wrestler I want to mention is Mr. Hedo. As someone who's really impressed me. In this foot, mm-hmm. I think he's a real solid worker, mm-hmm. very crisp execution, and that's fitting because he trained Bret Hart. He was one of the guys who trained Bret Hart. I really like him. He's got great timing, everything like that. That just great technical skills. I really like him.
Yeah, cool. So our next promo was Ed with John Foley. And Big Daddy Ritter and Dynamite, who is now full heel for sure.
Yeah.
And this is John Foley saying that they again, go talking about the world heavyweight and this time the world junior champion. Eddie brings up Archie, John Foley says, "Don't you think Archie is a little old?" Big Daddy Ritter calls their team of Dynamite and himself the Salt and Pepper Team. And I think this is the first time Dynamite had heard it, because if you watch him as Ritter says right. this, he's like trying to hide a smile.
Yeah, totally. Oh yeah, he was totally just barely holding it together.
Yeah. Dynamite Kid is now a full heel, and you see the early kind of things of that kind of snotty hooligan, soccer hooligan attitude we see from him. Big Daddy, at the end there, he tries to get, Big Daddy Ritter tries to get Ed on their side, because they talked about, you know, we could use an announcer, like somebody to like, because they're like, I'm the world's best wrestler, we're going to be the world's greatest tag team, and this is the world's greatest manager, you could be the world's greatest announcer. And, you know, at the very end, Big Daddy Ritter calls out Stu, so he brings him up, and they're about to leave, and Mr. Foley reminds him, money does talk.
Catchphrase.
Yeah. Which leads us into our next match, which is Hercules Ayala versus Keith Hart. We see some, like, again, I don't know if you noticed it, but I'm seeing more recently, or in these more recent things, the more that some fire from Keith Hart.
Another revelation.
Yeah. 10 minutes. This one starts at the 10 minute mark. They mentioned Jake Roberts for the first time.
Yeah.
Who we will see later. Keith Hart is thrown out into the seats. The crowd behind Keith was hilarious for this. And I started to think, like, maybe I'd mentioned something about, maybe it was when we were talking about Lucha Underground. It's been a long night, you guys. I should mention we've recorded my other show earlier today, Lucha Afterground. About Lucha Underground episode, Kelly was nice enough to fill in for my co-host, so there may be a bit of bleeding in between my subconscious.
I don't even remember what podcast we're doing anymore.
But I was noticing Keith Hart's in-between stuff might be what it is that he's still able to like execute, and he, like I said, he had a bit more fire here, but he's not committed to whatever, keeping into that moment in between when he's doing
right,
you know, each of these spots, right? Maybe that's it. I don't know. And then pardon me, Hercules Ayala hits a buckle bomb in 1979 on Keith Hart, and it looked nasty.
Another historical moment. The first ever buckle bomb.
Alan from Parv's other show, that Letters from Kayfabe, had posted it as a GIF on Twitter.
Yep.
So you can find it there. Look for it. It's great. It looks like, I talked about how these turnbuckles look nasty in the Stampede, and this did not look like, I guess Keith was having to sell much. And sure enough, Hercules Ayala wins off of that.
Yeah, led to the pin, too.
Yeah. That was a pretty quick match, but it was a good one. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
Our next interview is Terry Sawyer and Jake Roberts.
Yeah.
Jake Roberts at this time is the champion, the North American heavyweight champion in Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Sawyer. what can you tell me about
him? I don't know much. Did I? Oh, no, I meant to look up Terry Sawyer, but for whatever reason, I didn't get around to it. He's not a very good interview, I can tell you.
I really felt the promos, we were getting, it felt like every, we'd get a new character and another great promo. And while we still got good promos from the guys we knew, we didn't get any new guys delivering really great promos.
No.
Which was, and again, this is Jake Roberts early in his career, but there was nothing particularly special from him. He was just showing, it was weird to see him showing, he just had like this kind of weird humility.
Totally different character.
Yeah.
And just the way he spoke, and even the sound of his voice was totally different.
Mm-hmm. And he's saying, like, maybe I can take a shot at Harley, he said. So that obviously would have been Harley Race. So do you know what was the main event this Stampede?
I don't. I'm wondering if, well, because the NWA champion could work as a heel, as a face, right? That was a, you know, they always went for that, a wrestler that was skilled in that regard, because you would be going to different territories and it depended on who the top draw was. If it was a heel, if it was a face, then you would wrestle the NWA champion. So you had to be versatile. So it could have been either Roberts or it could have been Big Daddy Ritter, perhaps regaining the title and going against Harley. I'm not sure. That's a good question.
Cool if we could find that card. I know it's sitting somewhere in that vault in Stamford,
Connecticut. Maybe, because when they did do the shows during Stampede Week, they went to the corral, right? They, to pack in more people. And I'm not,
so there might not have been cameras then.
I'm not sure. I've seen corral shows from when we were watching in the '80s, late '80s, or you know, 86, 87. But I can't say I've ever seen a corral show from like the '70s or the '80s. So I don't know.
All right, I guess we'll just always have to wonder. So speaking, this is from the late '70s. This promo felt like it was from the '60s. The way these guys are talking, like, maybe I'll take a shot at Harley. Like, ever there was all so soft spoken, and come on, get me excited for you guys.
Right.
So cuts to the match was Terry Sawyer and Jake Roberts versus Big Daddy Ritter and Dynamite Kid. Cut to the hot crowd, all four in the ring. We've learned that the top rope rule is not in effect. We should mention, we haven't said that before, that over the top in Calgary was automatic DQ.
DQ, yeah, that's basically NWA rules, right?
Okay, of course.
Yeah.
Dynamite Kid selling big early. Ritter starts getting dirty with eye gouges and rakes. Do you remember there was a really unique Irish whip counter in this match? Do you remember this?
Yeah. Was that where Roberts went down into the corner in an odd way that didn't seem to fit? I thought that was another botch, perhaps.
It could have just been improvisation. I'd never seen the way that kind of, somebody kind of slid out of the way. Like, usually when you do counters in an Irish whip where somebody spins it around, like all four guys are involved, but one guy just kind of, I'm going to eliminate myself from this little dance you're about to do, and you guys finish it off.
Yeah, maybe that's what they were going for. For me, I just never seen that before.
Yeah.
Strange. And this was a Texas Tornado tag match.
That's right.
Where all four guys were in at the same
ring,
time.
Yeah.
No referee.
Just on the outside,
Just on the outside. So it was a total mayhem.
Yeah. Dynamite flips into Big Daddy Ritter in the corner, like a great flip. Again, just really selling, like, when he'd get thrown around at this point. Big Daddy Ritter loads up the glove and KOs Jake for the win. He rose triumphantly, and Dynamite just had a bloody nose, right?
Great.
And then post-match, he hit him with his glove. Me and you, I guess they're talking about how far they're going to go. Mm-hmm. Oh no, it was the other two. So you're starting to see a bit of fire from Sawyer and Foley, because he talked to him right after the match. I guess this is probably why, like, Eddie would be running in there. I guess, like, Stu is recognizing that, you know, this isn't a guy with mad personality, Stu Hart. This isn't Dusty Rhodes, who's making sure these guys are going out there and cutting great promos are working on that side of their character. So you think the best time we're going to get anything good out of them is right after they're done,
in the moment.
Because it was a bit better from these guys, because they were hot. He hit him with his glove.
It was definitely Sawyer was better post-match pre-match. Pre-match, he was, cardboard, totally, no personality. Very much like he was just reading a script, no believability to it at all. But after the match, he was more fired up. And we have four guys in this match, and three of them would go on to be big stars in the WWF in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
Bad for Terry Sawyer. He couldn't make it 4-for-4. But I mean, we got Jake the Snake Roberts, Junkyard Dog, and Dynamite Kid in the same match.
Really cool. So JR, Roberts cut a better promo here, like I said. Mm-hmm. Foley shows up. I think he challenged, what's his name? Oh, no, I thought it was weird that they're mad at Big Daddy Ritter for doing this in a no disqualification match, but what the fuck are you going to do, you guys?
That's...
Dynamite Kid looks great with his bloody nose, I thought. Big Daddy Ritter has another great line, like, can't nobody stand up to this punch? Can nobody stand up to this punch? I'm getting all my accents mixed up. It's 11:30, you guys. Get off my back. I think Dynamite swears here at some point. It sounded like he got bleeped.
Oh, maybe.
An awesome pose with Dynamite Kid. John Foley reminds Eddie, does talk twice, one more time on the way out. And one more time, Big Daddy Ritter shouts, salt and pepper!
Salt and pepper team, baby!
As it's laid out. And, you know, Ed starts to say goodbye to everybody. And again, we start to notice, like, we're noticing all these little things that kind of tie us to what we love about Calgary. And it's kind of why we have these digressions, because it reminds us of growing up there.
Yeah, of course.
But just the way these kids are jumping into the ring and waving at the
camera and stuff. Yeah, like, yeah, no, that did really ring true and stuff. Yeah, like something we would have done, or maybe.
Yeah, for sure. Endearing. Yeah, it just reminds me of the good times in Calgary. But that will bring us to the end of this episode. I had said earlier that I thought these episodes were uneven because I just always kind of had them in the background when I was doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's still a fair assessment, but I think they've been far more entertaining throughout than otherwise.
Oh, I've had a blast watching this stuff.
Yeah.
I wish we had the whole year's worth of TV to go with. Because it's fun because you're seeing these guys that you're familiar with in different areas and later in their careers and seeing them in a totally different light. And you know, so Big Daddy Ritter has been such a cool little revelation.
Yeah.
I love seeing young Dynamite Kid.
Yeah.
He's great here.
Mr. Wrestling showing up
out of nowhere. All these guys from Puerto Rico that you didn't expect.
Mm-hmm. Neidhart and Brett the first time.
Yeah, the first ever match between those guys. Wow. I mean,
yeah, it's pretty cool.
It is. It's super cool stuff. And we got two more to go.
Two more from the 70s, and then we'll probably take a bit of a time leap from there. But it's been a lot of fun so far,
mm-hmm,
that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Any plugs you want to get in before we head off?
Not really. I mean, I just want to say, you know, this footage is available. It's on YouTube. I've uploaded the videos. An unlisted video, so you have to have the link to it. But I posted the link all over the place where all my usual haunts the last time we did this. So all I, you know, can say is, you know, give this a chance. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. You know, Stampede is a tough sell. and not just a Stampede, but 70s Stampede is an even tougher sell.
Sure.
So this is, you know, this obscure stuff. This is stuff that a lot of wrestling fans don't really gravitate to, but I'm just saying, give it a chance, check it out. The footage quality is awesome.
That's right.
It's just fun, real fun stuff, you know, 40-minute shows, and they're easily digestible, and you'll come up with you'll see a lot of nuggets, cool little bits from wrestling history.
Indeed. I will briefly mention Lucha Afterground, my Lucha Underground after show on the Place to Be Nation. Kelly, as I said, was nice enough to do a show with me earlier this evening. Next week, we're getting another Titan of Wrestling on the show. Pete has graciously offered up his services, and it'll be really cool to hear his take. So looking forward to that. Other than that, in the meantime and in between time, that's it. Another edition of Stampede Wrestling. Bye now.
There's a feeling in the air that you can't get anywhere except in Calgary.